Chapter 2, Benevolent Capitalists. Revenue, $6.5 million. Earnings before interest, taxes, deductions, and amortization, nothing. Corporate debt, $2.7 million. Employees, 110. Customers, 40. Locations, Clarinda and Atlantic, Iowa, Baltimore, Maryland, St. Paul, Minnesota, and New York City. The revolving loan expires in 15 months. My net worth, $100,000. Dan and I drove south through Iowa on Interstate 29 in our standard-issue rented white Ford Taurus, passing exits for what appeared to be only fields. After 45 minutes, Dan gave in and lit up a cigarette, hanging his arm out the passenger window and trying his best to blow the smoke outside. I coughed, but didn't begrudge my friend, partner, and boss his one weakness. He was, after all, in charge. Nearing 60, Dan was an old-school button-down executive, and I suspected he hadn't taken off his ancient houndstooth jacket since leaving home in Baltimore. A self-described, wrong-side-of-the-tracks Irishman, he looked more like a corporate version of George Carlin than the world's foremost expert on typesetting, and smelled like a country singer, all hair tonic and Benson & Hedges cigarettes. His bronze-to-gray hair was nearly the same color as his leathery skin, and thinning, but not so thin that he couldn't get it puffed up every morning with rigorous combing. He was thinking, as always, about his plans. How to remake the company we'd just bought. How to beat the East Indian competitors. How to take the company public. How to roll up the typesetting industry and make us millionaires. Those potential millions were both the first thing on my mind and the last. First because, quite obviously, I wanted to be a millionaire, and they would let me pay back my father his retirement money. They were the last because I had Dan, and he had taught me, "Millions are easy, kiddo. Building a company that will endure is hard." He should know. He had made millions for every boss he'd ever worked for, but never for long enough to get any of it for himself. We had worked together for more than 4 years at two companies, where he had been my boss and I had been his loyal tech guy ward. Both companies had been run by narrow-minded men who had thwarted Dan's typesetting dreams and had been the worst kind of owners, lying, greedy, and uncaring. Like my father, he had told me repeatedly that the good guys ultimately win in business. When we closed on the purchase of the 50-year-old Clarinda Typesetting Company 2 weeks ago, the good guys, we believed, were winning. The benevolent capitalist was now the CEO of his own company. Without my asking, he had made me, who had never owned anything, an equal shareholder with him, increased my salary by a third to $130,000 a year, and bestowed on me, who had never been the boss of anyone, the title of president. We turned off the green and white highway sign for the town of McPaul. McPaul had four pairs of railroad tracks, two houses, and a closed post office, a closed gas station, and a closed antique store. No more than a mile beyond, we crested a hill and then... nothing. Or rather, my city boy idea of nothing. Farmland. From the top of this crest, I could see 20 miles, and there was only one building. A corrugated steel Quonset hut that had been crushed by some natural disaster, lying in the field like a deity discarded soda can. Every other corner of the world was corn, soybeans, or sky. A third grader's watercolor of blue, green, and harvest gold. There must be states covered in tomatoes, or cucumbers, or radishes, or whatever else there is in the grocery store because Iowa doesn't have them. I asked a local, "What's that?" "Corn." "And that?" "Soybeans." Aside from the occasional cattle or pig farm, that was the only agriculture I would see. We arrived in Clarinda an hour and a half after leaving Omaha. Clarinda had a town square and a mixture of manicured Victorian and vinyl-sided ranch houses. Just over 5,000 people lived in what was the biggest urban center, with the only movie theater for 20 miles around. The Clarinda Tourism Board issued a brochure highlighting the other distinctions. Clarinda was the birthplace of Glenn Miller. He left when he was 2. The birthplace of 4-H, contested by at least one other town in Illinois, and the home of the largest indoor swimming pool in southwest Iowa, leaving one to assume that somewhere to the north and east lies a much more substantial indoor pool. Keeping up with the times, Clarinda had staked an additional claim as the locale where the hamburger was invented by a Mr. Bert Gray, employed by a German chef of the eponymous town. This, of course, was contested by just about everyone. It was nearly 10 o'clock. We went straight to the brand new Super 8 Motel at the edge of town. Although chain motels all appear to be the same, I, as an experienced business traveler, could spot the minute gradations in quality the way an Olympic judge could tell the difference between a 9.7 pommel horse routine and a 9.6. Do they serve three kinds of stale muffins for a breakfast or two? Is the morning orange drink thicker or thinner than water? Is there a morning orange flavored drink? The Super 8 was looking at a major technical deduction. There was no one at the desk. "Hello," I called. "Hello," Dan said more loudly and put his green overnight bag down. I looked around the corner down a hall of rooms. No one. I went and knocked. "When you find her," Dan said, "I'll be outside smoking." And he walked out, tapping a cigarette box against his wrist. A few minutes later, a young woman came out from the room behind the counter. "Oh, hi," she said. "I didn't know anyone was there." I told her we had reservations. "Look at that," she said, turning the page of the book where my and Dan's name were written with arrows across several pages. "You're staying a long time here. You must love Iowa." She smiled at me. No more than a teenager, her teeth were crooked in as many ways as she had teeth, which were not as many as there should have been. "Just fill out this card with your name and the company." "It's the Clarinda Company," I said. She looked at me blankly. The Clarinda Company had been located on First Street for 40 years. "I'm sorry," she said. "I'm not from around here. I'm from Newmarket." Newmarket was 15 miles away. My room had soap, but no shampoo. Not even the little ketchup packet kind that you have to tear open with your teeth. But I didn't deduct any more points. It's not enough hair to warrant a complaint. I was here for much more important business. My future millions, of course. I fell asleep to the lullaby of long-haul trucks on the highway, a dozen yards from my window carrying what sounded like giant tubs of loose metal pipes over the rumble strips intended to stop them from missing the lone traffic light in 50 miles.